Hello, and welcome to Rethinking Legal Law, a podcast by Speed Legal. I'm Ishwari Saxena, and here we talk to legal experts, industry leaders, and innovators about the many ways that legal tech is transforming the way we practice law. Today we have an amazing guest with us, Andy Nin. He's the Director of Solutions at Elevate and a wonderful human being that I had the pleasure of meeting during Legal Week in New York. So great to have you here today, Andy.
So great to be here, Shreya. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. I was just thinking back to our conversations in New York, and it was just very, like, I think I met you, and like one of the first few things you said was like, you know, legal tech, you know, it's going to like change the way people are practicing law. And like, I remember having this very, very enthusiastic conversation with you, and I love the energy. So I'm very happy to have the same energy here on the podcast today as we talk about, you know, what it means to be an innovator as a lawyer. And you've been a solutions architect. You're now working as director of solutions at Elevate, and that's a career path that I really admire. So just to kick things off, Andy, can you tell us a little bit about your sort of academic and professional journey? What led you to be this designer of solutions at Elevate?
Sure, yeah. Kind of high level, you know, I feel like my both educational and professional career have always been a bit unique. You know, I'm going to tell you this background and people are going to be wondering like, wow, how did you connect the dots? Hopefully that becomes clear. So I started my kind of professional journey. I actually started outside of legal. I thought I was going to be a doctor. It's what I wanted to do most of my life. And I actually got a bachelor's in science and biochemistry at the University of Florida. But quickly learned that my interests lie outside of that. I was really interested in business and law in general. Shifted career paths, then got my JD from Michigan State University College of Law, where originally I thought I was going to go down the patent law and IP law path. And while I'm very interested in that, I was exposed to this whole world of legal innovation and technology and its early stages, I think, by some wonderful professors, Daniel Katz, who I've now had the opportunity to work with in my professional career, as well as Renee Kanaki, who founded this really cool program, Reinvent Law, at Michigan State. And that just took me down this really unique path of wanting to solve problems in law from a business and technology perspective. So to help improve the business and practice of law through process innovation and technology. So, you know, just a little bit of background into, you know, where my career went from there. So I started my career in a startup company, unrelated to legal, but I was sort of the sole legal person, within this company. And it was actually in consumer goods, related to, like tech accessories, which was really cool. And then I moved on to Innovation Council at my former law school. So I helped build the innovation program further up there. And then I became a solutions architect with Seyfarth. That's really when I started to dive into this idea of solutioning in legal. So, you know, kind of building end-to-end solutions for the practice of law. And then I've done consulting for law departments at another law company. And then at Elevate, I've done a broad range of things. So, of course, the solution architecting, I've done customer success manager management, sales engineering, and just generally solving problems at this point. So I, you know, interact with customers regularly and I help them try to solve their pain points using our technology and process innovation.
Right. And what does it mean when you say like designing solutions and being a solution architect? Like, what does that mean to be a solutions architect as a lawyer? What does your work involve?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's a really full spectrum end-to-end process. So on the front end, it's understanding what a customer, we call it, at Elevate, we call our clients customers, but client customer, it's understanding what their needs are. What are the problems that they have today with the current process or the current tools they have in place? What are the future needs? What are they looking to solve? What are the benefits they're looking to achieve? Then it's thinking through how can we reinvent the process that they currently have, and I've done a lot of process mapping in my past, and it's you'd see that the process looks like it involves maybe 50 steps, but when you look at the core, you only need 5 of those steps, and so it's trying to cut out the irrelevant steps or things that are not really providing value to gain efficiencies, for example. Then it's, do we have technology that can help solve this problem? Can it improve efficiencies through automation? Will that provide real benefit to the customer? Then it's designing what that solution looks like from a process and technology perspective. Then it's sometimes, and if it is something that leads to a technology implementation, it's designing the requirements of that, communicating that to a developer or development team. In my past, I've actually done some of that work myself, so I was full hands-on through understanding, designing, and building the technology using different tools to build the solutions, and then implementing that for the customer, helping with change management a lot of this comes with change management. It's new, it's difficult sometimes to adopt these changes, and so it's helping with that, and then hoping to provide the realized benefit at the end of it all.
Great. Wow. And that all sounds sort of very like it's like you're combining a lot of like different disciplines into just like, creating the sort of legal solution. And like traditionally, like in law school, the way I was trained, it was very much like you read like sort of the black letter of the law, you interpret it, you look for precedents and you come up with some sort of an advice. How would you distinguish the process you use for designing solutions from how we're taught to traditionally think in law school?
Yeah, so I think that there's a lot of overlap. The thing, the skills, if you think about the skills we develop in law school, they are often very analytical. You have to think through the precedents, you have to understand the problems that are being faced and how to apply the law to a scenario. Similarly, I think about how to apply an innovative process or a technology tool to the problem. So I think there's a lot of overlap there. I think I've always been quite analytical, and a lot of the skills and expertise I developed in my science background, I think I apply to legal as well. So I think, again, there's a lot of overlap there in the approach. But it's just different, a slightly different discipline. I think in my law school training, I was fortunate to receive a lot of this additional kind of background and discipline. So I learned about design thinking, which really applies to a lot of what I do in my day-to-day. I learned about all of the new types of technologies that were on the horizon and how they were going to change the practice of law. Access to justice, which is a huge area of innovation within law, and the delivery of legal services. I think there's a lot of innovation happening there. Practical training, all of these things, I think, impact the direction of how we solve problems in law today.
Right. And and how would you say, how important would you say, like, for like lawyers that are not necessarily like, have the same remit as you or like, sort of thinking about law as a from the solutions architecture, solution designer perspective, do you think it is important even for just lawyers in general that are working with like clients, just advising them sort of on the more traditional model? Do you think it's important for them to also tap into their creativity and start thinking about legal advice as crafting, legal solutions as you are?
Absolutely. I think lawyers are part of the solution. They have to be part of the solution. Clients come to lawyers to help them solve a problem, whether it's legal and sometimes otherwise. And I've talked to many lawyers who say, "Well, I'm not just the lawyer. I'm the advisor. I'm the counselor. I'm, the emotional support." You tap into a lot of different things outside of the traditional discipline of you think of being a lawyer. So, As lawyers, we are the subject matter experts in the law, which means we can understand the nuances of what makes this legal. I think it's very beneficial to have that background to contribute to solving the problem. What I've seen in practice is there are sometimes there are gaps in understanding when someone is really good at solutioning but doesn't have the legal background, doesn't always understand the problem in the detail that they need to understand. So I think there's a benefit there. I think even something simple like just understanding what your client does. You have sometimes if that's technology, you have to understand the technology to be able to render the right advice. So it's I think lawyers it's more important nowadays than any time for a lawyer to really understand their client's business to provide the level of service the client's looking for.
Absolutely. And you bring up a very important point there. I think Ironclad, a lot of them have been sort of talking about legal means business. This is like an industry. It's not just about reading really fat books and becoming knowledgeable and being the person in the room that no one understands. It's about creating that sort of value for the clients. And if the clients, they're using technology, then the lawyers do need to understand that. Which brings me sort of to my next question about data analytics. Traditionally, there's this joke like lawyers can't do math, right? You're probably very different because you studied,
But
Stanford.
I'm familiar. We used to joke about that a lot.
I personally, cannot do math, and it was not why I chose law. I was just, more interested in the social sciences than I was, in the more sort of like STEM subjects. But do you think that with the current scenario, with the digital transformation of law and the customers also becoming sort of more aware of, how important those sort of data-driven decisions can be, do you think it's very important for lawyers everywhere, whether that's in-house law firms, to start leveraging data analytics and crafting their advice?
Absolutely. I would say from a practical perspective, lawyers don't have to be data experts, data analysts, or be really good at math. But they have to understand the value of that in how they practice law now nowadays. And if you think about everything that we do, we're creating data by delivering services or doing tasks. A lot of the solutions that we try to come up with are derived from problems that have continued to happen that create data for us to interpret. So I think when it comes to data analytics, it's incredibly necessary to deliver the type of services that clients are looking for today. From a business perspective, businesses are constantly collecting data or wanting to track data and metrics. It's really important if you want to improve efficiencies, for example. You have to understand, well, what's the current, for example, if you think about cycle times of work, right? So an example would be someone in legal receives a request to do work. They have to do some tasks. They have to create documents. They have to provide advice. That's the cycle of advice. And then it's delivering that back to the client, and that's a kind of a full life cycle of the work, and that takes some amount of time. Well, if you don't understand how long it's generally taking you to do that work, you can't really improve the delivery of that or the time of that. So it's starting with there, and then figuring out, okay, well, where can you improve the process to make each step faster, which provides more efficiency to deliver that service.
Great. And do you think it's also that kind of changes the role of lawyers, whether that's in-house or out counsel, from just like an advisor, like a legal advisor, to a strategic business partner?
Yeah, I think that's been changing for a while, and I think for the better. Traditionally lawyers are just seen as advisors, and especially if you think about in the context of law departments, lawyers are traditionally seen as cost centers and impediments to business. That's really changing, and it's changing because of the importance that law has in business, as well as the initiatives that a lot of departments are undergoing to transform the way they do work. So now it's shifting the idea that the law department is a cost center to a value center. And I know some really innovative lawyers in-house, general counsel. Like Steve Harmon at Elevate is a very innovative general counsel. Ronak Ray, a good friend of mine in the Bay Area, where we are, is a very innovative GC. And they take a very proactive approach to partner with the executives within respective companies to understand what the business challenges are, looking for ways to not only improve how they provide services, but the reporting and the metrics they provide to give real insight into what's happening. And also, in many cases, it's helping to find revenue, for example. Like, it's the opposite of being a cost center. It's can we find ways to, I mean, of course, reducing costs is one initiative. The other is to actually find revenue. And I think one of the ways that happens is in contracting, which we're, of course, very familiar with. But it's, can you review a set of contracts that you have to find, obligations that may have been missed, or even just preventing, in favor, non-favorable contracts from continuing to be renewed automatically, or to renegotiate terms, catching those dates. It's something simple like that, which can really have an impact on monetary impact on a business. So I think there's a lot of things happening there that are very innovative. And just another thought I have about this, many lawyers that are great lawyers in-house have come from big law firms where you are trained to work really hard, bill your clients, the billable hour, and that's your job, is literally just to grind and produce this work to bill. And you don't spend as much time, traditionally, you don't spend that much time thinking about ways to improve the firm business, although that is also shifting. It's been shifting for a while. But it's now realizing that your day job isn't just to do work and bill for it. It's can you think more strategically to better help your clients and the business that you work for?
Absolutely. And I think that's a very interesting and important point, like the billable hour method. Almost anyone that I've talked to that has anything to do with legal tech or just legal innovation, I just say that and they just sigh. It's like, I don't want to talk about the billable hour. And it's refreshing now that it's changing, as you're saying. There's a lot of law firms, they're actually hiring, creating more sort of multidisciplinary teams. Like they're hi hiring like data analysts, they're hiring like engineers, they're hiring like content people, just to sort of explore like the wide array of different tech tools that are out there, and changing their own processes, innovating along the way. So it's very refreshing, because I was just earlier speaking with someone who works at a large law firm, and she was saying that, the consumers, the clients are realizing that legal can be like a huge cost center, and it doesn't it has it's like not justifiable that it is a cost center, because it can be more efficient than like in-house teams that are struggling with resources, and then they sort of like transfer that onto outside counsel, like that like cost pressure. They don't want to have to pay as much for the value that they're getting, and so law firms are rethinking the billable hour, which I'm personally very, very excited about, because as a law student, when I would see like lawyers like doing their jobs, I was inspired. But at the same time, what's happening now with digital transformations is something that I personally am more sort of passionate about. So Andy, what are some of the most effective tech tools that are out there that is really, really changing the way we're practicing law today?
So first of all, I completely agree about the billable hour situation. I think just to kind of something I thought about there is rethinking what people are paying for. I mean, people nowadays want to pay for value, not necessarily for time. And I think if you can shift the way that you think about how that's happening, for being able to provide value, you can really shift that piece of it. But when you think about these technologies, so these technologies are really enabling us to innovate and to provide those efficiencies and to move away from that traditional billable model, for example. So, I think there's a at least a few ways that come to mind, technologies that are really changing things. So, I think when you think about at the very front of the process, what we sometimes refer to as the front gate of work or the intake of work, I think there's a lot of innovation happening there to streamline the workflows that people do on a day-to-day basis. So it's streamlining where how you're receiving requests to do the work. As a let's say as a law department, as a lawyer, traditionally it was someone passing you paper or calling you, coming to your office, email, of course, it was the kind of the next evolution of that. But and then e but emails get inundated. You get inundated with internal emails, external emails. You're switching back and forth. It creates a lot of if inefficiencies, lack of transparency, you miss things. So I think there's a lot of innovation happening, even just on the front forefront of streamlining how you're getting requests to do legal work. So workflow tools, there's a lot of automation happening there to reduce the reliance on email, to create a central place for a lawyer to go to receive and even then do that work in a streamlined fashion to kind of push process into that structured process into the work that they're doing. I think another major area is, of course, contract lifecycle management is a huge one. It's one of my favorite areas that's being innovated in. I feel like I've developed a lot of expertise in contract management over the years, just focusing on ways to improve that. But that is everything from the intake of how you receive a request to work on a contract to helping to automate the delivery of that contract back to the person who needs it, to managing what happens after that contract is executed, digitizing what's in that agreement and being able to take action using technology. So it's, can you be notified when your contract is up for renewal or is going to expire so that you don't miss key deadlines, or it's an obligation you have to the person you contracted with is, hey, I need to provide proof of cybersecurity insurance every year above a certain threshold. It's making sure you're adhering to those agreements. And then reporting and analytics. And then I think the obvious one that people talk about, that everyone's excited about or not, is AI and machine learning. I think there's a lot of innovation happening in that space, not only in the contracting world, but being applied more broadly. So I see this being applied to e-billing and invoice review, to help with outside counsel guidelines when it comes to billing, for example, or just improving automation, interpreting requests based on text analytics. I think there's some really interesting things happening in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like the CMS and workflow optimization are like personally just like so important to me as well, because I think Alex Hsu did from Ironclad did like a very good real like TikTok on this, where like there's like a lawyer, like in-house lawyer starts his day, he gets like one request, he's like, okay, I'm ready, I'm gonna like start doing this, and like 10 minutes later he's working on that, he's halfway through it, there's like 20 other requests that just came about, and like he doesn't know how to prioritize them. No one's saying like you can do this later, everyone needs something like yesterday, so
Of
they kind of
course, yes, the age-old
just
timeline of yesterday.
exactly.
Yeah, no, I know. I love Alex Hsu's TikToks, and I see them on. They pop up on LinkedIn for me all the time, and I always get a chuckle out of them because it's just so real. Like it's like we've experienced this as lawyers in some fashion, all of these problems, and it's great. But yeah, it's like a humorous view of things that really happen, and being able to prioritize work as a simple subject is kind of a difficult thing to tackle. But I think there's a lot of innovation happening in that, in terms of automation and helping to prioritize things. So yeah, I'm excited to see where that type of technology goes.
Yeah, totally. And with CMS too, just like a few months ago, like early this summer on this podcast, it's so we had Tara Trentham, who'd worked as in-house at a really large company, and she was talking about how like there was one time like she was going through all their vendor agreements, and there was one vendor they were not really I believe they were not really interacting with, but the contract had been sort of auto-renewing since 1996.
Wow.
And it just sort of fell through the cracks. People forgot about it. So, there you have it. I mean, there's probably more contracts like that that a lot of large businesses, enterprise level in particular, conglomerates tend to have, and no one's really looking for them because human beings are not like, we're not the best at just keeping track of a thousand things at once. We can do a lot of stuff, but that is why I think those sort of AI-based tools or some automation and management and organization, I think, are just so critical because this should
Yes,
not be happening in the 21st
exactly.
century.
I hear about this a lot, actually. It's shocking how often this happens. I talk to a lot of customers that this happens to at all kinds of organizations, companies that you'd say, oh, they must have a well-oiled machine, and it's not the case always. But yeah, it you're right. It seems like a simple problem, but we just haven't had the right processes in place or the right tools in place in the past to fix these common problems. But we're I think there are many solutions out there that are great for solving this.
Yeah, totally. And like, speaking of like this new age digital transformations, one of the things that I've seen you talk about, Andy, is like the T-shaped lawyer, like the new age T-shaped lawyer. Can you just explain for the listeners what it means to be a T-shaped lawyer?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love this concept. So I'll first mention, because I feel like this doesn't always get attributed correctly. Because there's been a lot of talk about T-shaped lawyers over the past almost 10 years now. So this term was actually coined by my law school colleague, Amani Smathers. She gave a TED Talk style or TED Talk presentation at the reInvent Law Conference in 2014, and subsequently published in Law Practice Magazine. So she coined this term, T-shaped lawyer, which I think, or the idea of T-shaped started, I think, outside of legal. But the idea is to have some sort of deep expertise, which, if you think about the T, you've got the deep expertise in law, and then this broad knowledge across the top of different skill sets and knowledge and disciplines. So think technology, process design, business and innovation, finance, leadership, emotional intelligence. I mean, the list goes on. I'm seeing people talk about ways that they're broadening the T, which is in practice so true. I mean, I think about my own journey and the things that I've learned about, myself, the skills that I develop and the knowledge I gain through the work that I do. I constantly think about how I'm broadening my T to understand new disciplines, new industries. You really need that today, I think, to be an effective lawyer and legal innovator. So that's where the concept I think came into play. And yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting things happening both in industry as well as education, law schools that are pushing this.
Yeah. Wow. And that's such a great concept. Like the deep knowledge, and then like you can just keep broadening your horizons in all these other different directions. I think it just makes the lawyers and what they can do like limitless. Or like maybe I'm just too inspired, but I just love that concept that you could have the knowledge of law, which I think is like supposed to be like a baseline. I've always thought about that. This is a baseline. There's a lot more to learn, once you get out of a law school. And I think it starts out with taking the bar, because that's when you first learn that, okay, I only learned a little bit. I'm gonna have to relearn a lot of like new things, and then you go out and you practice. Absolutely love this concept. And how do you think, Andy? You talked about how during your law school curriculum, you were exposed to all these different things, but that's not really always the case when it comes to law school, right? Like, I mean, it's a very sort of, it's like cold calls, like the Socratic method of teaching, and just sort of like focusing very much on like case law. And it's a very competitive atmosphere, which does not leave a lot of room for, that much like exploration, because you're so focused on grades and being, the top 20% and stuff like that. How do you think that the existing law school curriculum, at least in the US, needs to evolve to create more sort of T-shaped lawyers like you?
Yeah, so I completely agree. I think traditionally, the traditional law school curriculum did not leave a lot of room for this, but I've seen that change a lot, especially since I was in law school and soon after. I think there was a lot of innovation happening in the law school curriculum at only a handful of schools. And from what I've seen, numerous schools now are getting on board with this idea of we need to change and innovate the traditional curriculum because this is what our students want. This is what they're looking for. It's where the careers are shifting. Even if you go into a more traditional practice role, you're still going to be exposed to a lot of the things that we're talking about here. So, design thinking and legal technology, practical training and artificial intelligence, all these topics, are really important to the future practice of law. And I'm seeing a lot of schools that are already innovating in the space and who have been doing this for almost 10 years now or more. But I think about, of course, my alma mater, Michigan State University, was doing a lot here. Chicago Kent College of Law in Chicago, Dan Katz, who was my former professor at MSU, is now there doing really amazing things. Another former professor of mine from Michigan State is now at Northwestern in Chicago, and he's also developing really great kind of cross-functional law plus customer or sorry computer science program. But there's a lot of other rep name schools, North Stanford, Suffolk, UC Hastings here in our neck of the woods, Oklahoma, Denver, Richmond. I mean, these are all schools that are doing really innovative things in everything from technology to practical applications in practice to design thinking, all of these things. There's so many great things happening. But I think that I can see more schools hopping on board here. I think it's at some point these will be critical as part of the curriculum. It won't be acceptable to not include these things because this is what's required once people get out of law school.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is also like it, becoming so rich with different opportunities, because there's like legal tech startups, there's like larger legal tech companies like Elevate, there's Ironclad, LexisNexis has a lot more like legal tech type of opportunities. And you could be a product designer as a lawyer. You could be and you started your career, you said, with like a startup as well. So I think there's just so many opportunities to be the new age like T-shaped lawyer. Like, there's nothing wrong with going working and starting out in law firm. You just learn so many things. But if that's not, something that's your cup of tea, then like there's so much out there. And that's the thing that really excites me, because it makes like a always say it makes like practice of law limitless, and it's really fun. This has been a great conversation, Andy. Thank you so much for sharing all your insights, and really looking forward to following more of what you innovate and design at Elevate, and continuing our conversation, of course, offline as well. And thank you to all our listeners for tuning in again. We'll be here back on Thursday. Next week we'll have Ashley Best, former Asana, on the podcast. And once again, thank you so much, Andy, for being
This is
here today.
wonderful. Yeah, thank you so much.
The practice of law is changing, and we're here for it. Thank you so much for tuning in for today's episode of Rethinking Legal Ops. Follow us for more such insightful conversations about the transformative impact of legal tech. Also, follow Speed Legal and let us know in your comments and messages about how you leverage legal tech solutions to make your work more efficient. See you next time.